If you enjoyed these podcasts, check out Byron Reese's newest book. It's about artificial intelligence and covers all the topics addressed on Voices in AI. It's called The Fourth Age: Smart Robots, Conscious Computers, and the Future of Humanity. And it's available now wherever fine books are sold.
This is Voices in AI, brought to you by GigaOM, and I'm Byron Reese. Today, my guest is Jerome Glenn. He has, for 23 years, been the director and CEO of the Millennium Project. It's a global proprietary think tank with 63 nodes around the world, producing the annual State of the Future since 1997. And it's a whole lot more than that as well. I think we're going to have a great half hour. Welcome to the show, Jerome.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Well, I don't know that I gave a full and proper introduction to the Millennium Project, which I'm sure many of my listeners are familiar with, but just bring us all up to date so we all know how you spend your days.
Well, I spend my days reading all day long and responding. The Millennium Project was actually conceived back in 1988. And the idea was the year 2000 was coming up, and we ought to do something serious as serious futurists so that we didn't get interviewed by guys like you and had too much to drink the night before and said something stupid. So we decided to create a global system to create global futures research reports relatively quickly. We now have 64 nodes around the world. These nodes are groups of individuals and institutions that help find people that got the best ideas in their countries and to bring all those ideas together and assess them and do various reports on the future of ethics, the future of AI, the future of all kinds of different stuff. And we're not proprietary research, by the way. We do some specific research contracts, like we designed the collective intelligence system for the Kuwait Oil Company, but that was so that we would get experience in doing it. But we're not a regular proprietary consulting company as such. It's more like a public utility where we're looking at the whole game as much as possible. And then people draw from our stuff and our methods and content the way they like.
And so since the millennium has come and gone, unless maybe it's now the third millennium, is there a timeline focus of the group? Are you, I mean, because there's a difference between asking like what's life going to be like in 5 years versus 500 years, right?
Right. Sure. Sure. Now we don't tend to do 500 years too often. Although in 1999, we did write five alternative 1,000-year scenarios. The idea was that since everybody was looking back 1,000 years to the Vikings and the rest of it, we figure we ought to at least look out 1,000 years and see what we do. And those scenarios are actually on our website. People can take a look at them. But normally, depends on the issue. If you're looking at financial stuff, you're looking short range. Obviously, if you're looking at environmental stuff, you're looking at longer range. So we don't have a set timeline. What we do have is a set of 15 global challenges that we update and improve insights, hopefully improve insights, on an ongoing basis. And that's much of the annual report of the State of the Future, but it's also the framework for understanding global change that we have in our online collective intelligence system.
So when you write these materials, are you writing them for the general public, for policymakers, is there any group in particular that's like your intended audience for your materials?
Yeah, well, like any writer, we're happy that anybody read our stuff, but it's more for people who are actually engaged in decision making. They're the thought leaders, they're the advisors for policy people. A lot of the corporate strategic planning folks read this stuff, use it regularly. It's also used by government foresight folks around the world. And an increasing number of libraries got our stuff, university libraries, because a lot of universities now are teaching sort of global strategic stuff and long-range future technology sort of stuff. And so the universities are using some of our stuff, like say the future they use in their content. It's like a textbook. And then those that teach methods use our futures. We have a series of 37 different methods of looking at the future. It's the largest collection of methodology around. And so increasingly the college audience is getting involved in this. But initially, it was your UN long-term folks, your government policy people, and mostly advisors to the policy decision makers, and the corporate players.
So let's pick an issue. Our show is Voices in AI. Tell me what you think about artificial intelligence. What are some of the open questions? What are some of the things that we think might be obvious at this point?
Yeah, I think one thing we're trying to get the world to get clarity on is there's a tremendous confusion between artificial narrow, general, and super AI. And it's extremely annoying. I'll give you an example. In Korea, as you know, the AlphaGo beat the Go champion.
Mm-hmm.
And many people in Korea, I go there a lot, were going nuts because they're saying, oh, my God, all these things that Elon Musk and Hawkins and
Gates right, were playing, right.
It's here now. And you go, no.
It's something different, right.
No.
No, I'm with you. So let's split that up into three separate things. I'm sure all of my listeners are familiar with the distinction, but of course, narrow AI is a technology designed to do one thing. The only fear people have around it typically are related to automation, not any of these dire scenarios. And then there's general intelligence, which is a technology we don't know how to build, and that experts disagree is when we'll get it. To between 5 and 500 years. And then there's superintelligence, which is a highly theoretical kind of general intelligence that has evolved so quickly to such a state that it is as incomprehensible as to us as, you know, as we are to an ant.
Right. What I would add, so, I'd add two things to that, though.
Go ahead.
One is I think it's proper for Elon Musk and the rest of the folks to start raising red flags right now, because, as you point out, we don't know how long it'll take to get to general intelligence. It might be 10 years, but it may be longer. We don't know. But if we do get it, we also don't know a more important thing, and that is how long it'll take to go from general to super, where super sets its own goals without our understanding. That might never happen. It might happen almost immediately. we don't know. So mm-hmm. It's better to panic early on this.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute.
Okay.
So let's go with the general intelligence first. We'll start in the middle.
Okay.
I've had almost 100 people on this show, and they're all, for the most part, practitioners in AI. And I ask them all, you know, do you believe we can build a general intelligence? And then I ask, are people machines? And let me just ask you that to begin with. Is our brain a machine, do you believe?
Well, my early education was philosophy.
Uh-huh.
So in the philosophy world, we always say, well, it depends on your definition.
Well, let me ask it a different way then. Do you believe that with regards to the brain and by extension the mind, that there's nothing that goes on in them that cannot fundamentally be explained by the rules of physics?
I think that's a useful, one of the additions of the United States to philosophy was what's called pragmatic philosophy. It said, I don't know what the truth is, but I know what works and what doesn't work. I think taking what you said as a working hypothesis and pursuing that way will produce more value than just guessing. So I'm sympathetic to that, but I don't know enough truth to know the answer to that.
Well, I mean, the